Whether it's the US or other locales that grow their market share at the expense of China, it will be a significant win for Bitcoin's decentralization. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible, the place where you will find the literal audio library of all the best works, topics, research papers, and education in the Bitcoin universe. That's right, I am Guy Swan, your narrator and professor for today's Bitcoin journey. And this is actually, we're reading an article today, and this is actually one I've been meaning to hit for quite some time, and you guys upvoted on BitcoinAudible.vote. Sorry, I procrastinated on this one. but I've been wanting to get to this topic because a lot of people really kind of missed that this happened. And I'm surprised by how many people just kind of, I guess, didn't really look closely at this. It was just kind of a background, you know, news item. And yet I think it's one of the most significant things that has happened this year. But I've only briefly mentioned it a few times on the show. At the beginning of this year, China held a significant majority, roughly, it was estimated at about 65% of the Bitcoin hash rate within its geographic borders. Today, they hold a mere fraction of that, and the United States has become the hash rate center of the world. How did this happen so quickly? And what implications does this have for the Bitcoin ecosystem? What lessons can we draw from this? So we're getting into all of this with an excellent article from back when this was at the height of, you know, being underway. And this one's written by Nick Carter. Everybody knows Nick, many-time author on the podcast, obviously, all around excellent Bitcoin follow. If you're somehow following me and not Nick Carter, you have failed. I've got a link to his Twitter in the show notes. But before we get into today's article, let's thank our sponsors really fast. And the first thing you need to do is get your Bitcoin 2022 tickets. We're going to be in Miami, and it is at the beginning of April. Make it happen. Get your spot reserved. You don't want to wait on this one. And get 10% off your ticket with my referral code, GuySwan. That is Swan with two N's, by the way, and my link will take you directly there, guyswan.com/2022. A huge thank you to the Fold app and the debit card in particular for letting me stack sats. I get sats back rewards on literally everything I do, and that is a hard service to replace. Get 20% off the annual fee for the Spin Plus, the premium card, at guyswan.com/fold. And now, Satsback rewards are kind of the sprinkles on your savings, but the meat is an automatic savings plan with Swan Bitcoin. Go to swanbitcoin.com/guy. I have my buy set up for every single week, and that's just the start of what they offer. And you also get automatic withdrawals that go straight to your keys on your BitBox hardware wallet. These guys have a secure, open source, easy to use way to keep the coin safe. Do not be a sad story of lost Bitcoin. Get a hardware wallet and protect it. 5% off with discount code GUY. That is just three letters. Three letters, 5% off. That's a pretty big ROI, you know? Okay. Now with that, let's get into today's article. And it is again by Nick Carter. And it is titled, Go West, Bitcoin. Unpacking the Great Hash Rate Migration. All signals indicate the greatest shakeup in the geographic makeup of Bitcoin mining since the start of the industrial mining era. By now, it should be clear the hash rate migration is real. Miners are leaving China for good. As of April 2020, an estimated 65% of Bitcoin hash rate was domiciled in China. With confirmed bans across the country, That figure will be far lower 12 months from now. The precise magnitude and schedule for the westward move is currently unknown, but all signals seem to be indicating the greatest shakeup in the geographic makeup of Bitcoin mining since the start of the industrial mining era. Hypotheses for the motivations behind China's move to eliminate mining abound, although no single explanation appears sufficient as of yet. One obvious explanation would be a desire to meet climate targets and reduce emissions, but this is contradicted by China's continued embrace of coal power. It added three times as much in 2020 as the rest of the world combined. And that the crackdown extended to hydro-powered regions like Sichuan. Officially, the justification for the crackdown on, quote, Bitcoin mining and trading behavior, announced in the statement issued by Vice Premier Liu He, was to, quote, resolutely prevent the transmission of individual risks to the social field. If the objective is to curb speculation in cryptocurrency, exchanges would be the more obvious targets. Even though executives at the onshore exchanges Huobi and OKX do periodically get detained and harassed by the Chinese state, those exchanges are still up and running. And banning mining does little to inhibit Ponzi's like Plus Token, which the Chinese state considers to be a source of social instability. Other analysts have said China sees Bitcoin as a competitor to its own digital currency project, the DCEP. But again, Bitcoin mining is a largely self-contained industry. Banning mining does little to inhibit Bitcoin transactions or exchanges. They are totally distinct concerns. Transactions can be assembled and included in blocks anywhere. The Chinese crypto industry would work perfectly well even if all mining was domiciled offshore. Another popular, plausible motive for the ban would be continued efforts to stem unmanaged capital outflows. RMB to USDT, or Tether, markets are probably the most popular crypto-enabled means of offshoring wealth from the mainland. But mining could also be interpreted as a way to convert capital-controlled, encumbered local currency into highly mobile global wealth. By electricity and ASICs, create hash rate, and receive Know Your Customer or KYC-free tokens that can be circulated and sold worldwide. At 60% of global hash rate, that's a potential flow of $8.1 billion a year worth of Bitcoin into Chinese miner wallets. One alternative explanation that bears noting, but has received little discussion so far, is the continued integration of the Chinese grid. As China developed its energy resources and became the largest builder of energy infrastructure over the last few decades, it developed an extremely unbalanced grid, with enormous mismatches between supply and demand. China's scale and varied geography and energy grid meant that extremely abundant energy resources were being produced in remote locations where there simply wasn't demand for them. In northern provinces like Xinjiang and Inner Mongolia, huge amounts of power from coal and wind or solar went unconsumed, and in the southern provinces of Sichuan and Yunnan, abundant hydro resources far exceeded local demand. The major population centers in China are mostly along the southern and eastern coast, thousands of miles away from the most abundant and cheap sources of energy. As a consequence, China became the world's capital of energy curtailment. As described by Ohm's law, electricity simply doesn't travel well at standard voltages, and so must be produced relatively close to load centers. When there isn't local demand for energy, it goes unused. So in 2016 and 2017, China was curtailing, effectively wasting, extreme amounts of power. In 2017, Chinese curtailment from hydropower reached 55 terawatt hours, a figure equivalent to the entire energy output to the country of Switzerland. In 2016, China curtailed another 52.2 terawatt hours of wind and solar. There simply was insufficient local demand to consume this abundance of energy, leading authorities to rethink the grid's design. Starting in 2010, China has been constructing an ambitious, continent-spanning, ultra-high-voltage power transmission network to transmit power from remote regions with abundant energy to load centers, balancing out the grid. Today, 40,000 kilometers of high-voltage transmission exists, with the longest lines stretching over 3,000 kilometers. Much has been made of the Chinese Communist Party's DCEP ambitions, or general aversion to freedom tech like Bitcoin, in justifying the mining ban. Less has been said about the fact that the presence of miners in China was always contingent on the availability of stranded energy. The central and regional government had hitherto tolerated the monetization of excess energy because it simply wasn't being put to alternative economic use. But as the grid integration and load balancing has improved in the last 5 years, Bitcoin miners have increasingly begun to compete with other industrial and commercial uses. And while sources are hard to find, some analysts have characterized the mining crackdown as part of an anti-corruption campaign, targeting regional officials for selling electricity on the black market. The Inner Mongolia regional guidance also seems to hint at this, making specific reference to, quote, public officials who use their positions to participate in virtual currency mining or provide convenience and protection for them. Through this lens, the CCP-level crackdown could be interpreted as a reassertion of power relative to officials in far-flung provinces monetizing state resources without permission. The integration of the grid makes the central government much less willing to tolerate the regional monetization of energy, now that miner-driven consumption increasingly rivals other load centers. By now, we know the crackdown is genuine. Machines are being turned off and hash rate is dipping. It is still unclear where these newly mobile miners will end up. The United States has the second most capacious grid in the world, and some miners appear optimistic about the opportunities to migrate hash rate west without sustained interruption. Hardware manufacturer Bitmain advertised at a recent conference for its elite clients an abundance of hosting opportunities in the U.S. While their assumptions about the amount of available hosting power were definitely aggressive, it's clear Chinese miners are looking westward. Raw electricity cost is no longer the sole consideration. Today, political stability, regulatory clarity, and a respect for private property rights are paramount in miner decision-making. Some hosting services will be able to accommodate the demand by rotating higher-end units from Chinese miners in for older units. Where shelf capacity doesn't exist, new infrastructure must be built. In the U.S., obtaining the necessary permits can take upwards of 6 months. Additionally, while some states like Texas, Governor Greg Abbott spoke at the Bitmain conference, warmly welcoming miners to his state, and cities like Jackson, Tennessee, and Miami have indicated their openness to miners, others like New York have taken a decidedly hostile approach. Other more convenient near-term geographies include Kazakhstan, Central Asia, and Russia. But whether it's the U.S. or other locales that grow their market share at the expense of China, it will be a significant win for Bitcoin's decentralization, the stability of mining, and Bitcoin's climate impact. At long last, Bitcoin's vulnerability to China and the CCP is melting away. All right, and that will close out the article by Nick Carter on unpacking the great hash rate migration. And I want to do a short guy's take on this piece. Let's hit our sponsor real fast and we will jump back in. I have 4.1 million sats back now. That's with my Fold card. It is literally right in my Fold account, or my Fold app, and that's worth like $2,300-ish as of this episode. And I can just withdraw that and do whatever I want with it. It's my Bitcoin. Probably what I am going to do with it is actually send it to my node and open a Lightning channel with it. It cost me $150 for the card, the Spin Plus card, that earned me the $2,300. Now, you guys actually can get a discount, a 20% discount, no less, if you use my link at guyswan.com/fold. That's a freaking steal, in my opinion. And you don't even have to use it constantly. It's only recently that I, like, hardcore doubled down on this thing. One of the best ways to shortcut, like, some really good rewards is replace a few of the major merchants you use with their gift cards on the Fold app, and you get extra sats back on those gift cards with the debit card. Or you could just do it like me and just move your entire financial life over to Fold. You know, direct deposit straight to Fold, baby. I got sats back on my washer and dryer rental the other day, and it was just kind of, I don't know, it made me smile. It's 3,800 sats, like $2 or something. And it just feels good to know. Like, every stupid fiat bill that comes through is giving me a little piece of sovereignty. Little sats sprinkles on my life every single day. Check it out at guyswan.com/fold. Okay. So this piece by Nick Carter, again, this one's a little bit dated. This happened right when the migration was underway. So we were watching this huge hash rate dump on the Bitcoin network. And if you didn't see it, if anybody was, you know, not really aware of this, which you technically didn't have to be, when I was using Bitcoin, if I wasn't following the news and Twitter and the conversations and listening to podcasts and all that stuff, I literally wouldn't have known. I wouldn't have known. Even with, like, watching the mempool and seeing, you know, that the hash rate was changing, like watching the prediction of the next hash rate, difficulty adjustment. And there was, like, a point, I think, where fees got, like, a little bit high during that period. But fees have actually been pretty low for a while, which has been a little bit surprising. And I know, like, I've gotten into it with a couple people on Twitter that it's not because of Lightning. Or at least they've been arguing that, and I'm just not 100% inclined to think that the rise in the number of Lightning channels and the number of people that I interact with personally who are using Lightning directly instead of on-chain Bitcoin has changed significantly. 1 year ago today, I would have expected maybe one or two, like just a few people that I interacted with to have Lightning wallets. And I would have felt maybe that they were confused or that maybe it was just BTC sessions. You know, it's just people that I know definitely go the next level and hit the Lightning network. Or use the stuff at the edge, you know, the forefront of Bitcoin tech. But like at BitBlock Boom, at OFF, the Oslo Freedom Forum, at a Bitcoin Standard Conference, everybody's been using Lightning. In fact, I had one situation, I may have even brought this up on the show, I had one situation where somebody wasn't using Lightning, they were like, oh, I'll give you a Bitcoin address, and it kind of threw me for a loop because I was so used to doing the invoice and grabbing my Lightning or Phoenix or Breeze or whatever, you know, Moon Wallet, whichever one that I was doing, that I was like, oh crap, wait, which one do I need to do to do normal on-chain Bitcoin? It threw me off balance a little bit. Totally beside the point. But the idea is that there was no real reason I would have known that this was happening, even though the hash rate literally cut in half. The amount of hashing on the Bitcoin network fell by around 50%, maybe a little bit more, in a matter of like a month. And yet, my experience with it did not change. I would not have known. That is a rather incredible testament to the resiliency and the robustness of the design of the Bitcoin system, of its decentralization, really. That half of the global security infrastructure of the Bitcoin network could unplug, pack up, and move to an entirely new location, maybe halfway around the world, over a period of a few months, and there's not the slightest interruption in Bitcoin's use in the service of Bitcoin. This has really been like that should be incredibly bullish news. Just the very idea that that is possible really just shows how unbelievably incredible the Bitcoin system is. And Nick Carter breaks down a number of different kind of theories about why the hell is China doing this exactly. And there's a lot of different elements at play, but I think he's right that none of them really quite line up. And I would assume that, you know, I want to give the benefit of the doubt that China's not just stupid and that they've not just made a mistake or thought about it incorrectly, and that it should make some sort of logical sense, whether it's to protect their own potential digital currency that they've been working on, or, you know, one or the other. I kind of like the idea, too, that the theory, at least the suggestion, that it could be something to do with their grid and the growing interconnectedness and the attempt to potentially curb what these energy sources are being used for when China is trying to actually make use of what has been essentially wasted energy up to this point. Now, in a normal market, this would not be a contest at all, because Bitcoin would only use what wasn't profitable to use elsewhere. But it's an interesting theory. I don't know. I haven't really dug much into that since I read this article. I've just been kind of keeping a watch on the hash rate and watching it. And by the way, for anybody who, you know, hasn't noticed or hasn't been keeping up on it, it's essentially recovered. It's not quite at the all-time high yet, but it's damn near close. It's essentially the vast majority of what left the network has now been put back onto the network. And it literally only took about 4 months. Now, I'm sure part of that is the continued growth that would have happened through that, and there's potentially probably still a lot that really hasn't gotten set back up. But it's just really incredible the degree of the infrastructure that has moved in such a short time and the complete lack of effect it has essentially had on the Bitcoin system. And, you know, like, I think we take it for granted how beautiful and incredible it is that that amount of infrastructure and that amount of hash power can migrate and leave and enter the Bitcoin network without interruption, without making any significant change for any significant period of time to the block time, to the payout, to the inflation rate. You know, that was the innovation of Satoshi, was the difficulty adjustment. And look how beautiful it works. It really is just I don't know, maybe I'm just a freaking nerd, but it just seems so elegant to me, and it's incredible to just watch all of this happen. Even though we've seen some big hash rate shifts in the past, this one was I think it was the biggest hash rate drop over the period of time that we've ever seen, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong about that. But I think also just the scope and the size of Bitcoin at this point in its history just makes it all that much more impressive, in my opinion. But as far as reasonings, you know, China's banned Bitcoin, quote unquote, I don't know how many times, like 9 times in, you know, since 2013 or 14 when they started really ramping up that narrative, even though I guess technically it was never really official. I don't even know how that works. How does the People's Bank of China come out and say, oh, banking institutions can't use Bitcoin at all, it's banned? And there was even a time where they said that individual users couldn't even transact in Bitcoin. But like, nothing happened. Did it ever just never get enforced? Was it just government officials, you know, buying a bunch of shorts and going out and saying something and then getting in with their buddies like, I told them we banned it again? You know, I mean, like, I don't exactly know the process there of either corruption or ineptitude that led to Bitcoin being banned that many times in China, but hey, it is what it is. But this one clearly was a real ban, at least to the extent that everybody packed up their shit and left. But you know, Nick Carter's right that it doesn't quite make sense that this is purely a currency issue from, I mean, everybody, I'm sure everybody has been at least hearing the constant conversations about CBDCs and the digital currency, the digital yuan and the digital currency program that China has been working on. And maybe they saw mining as kind of the foundation of that because it was such, you know, China was the mining country. So one could argue that that was a political flag that said they weren't serious about this, that they weren't going to require people on this because, look, I mean, they are the Bitcoin country. And being the Bitcoin dominant hash rate jurisdiction just made that look bad. I don't know. Maybe that's a stupid theory, but he's right. They didn't go after the exchanges. You know, they really haven't gone after people actually using it, trading it, and owning it, which is the real problem when you're trying to talk about competition for CBDCs. Maybe that's down the road. Maybe this is, you know, step one of a 5-step program of banning Bitcoin for real this time. And I'd say that's probably the same with the idea of the capital outflows, which Bitcoin is a very powerful force for that. But as Nick Carter said, is that the most popular offshoring of wealth is likely the USDT, the Tether markets. So why was that left untouched? But I don't know. I don't know. It's a lot of speculation. I don't think we've had any updated, or at least I haven't seen any updated real sources about why this is going on and what China's strategic plan is specifically. But I like the idea of looking at energy. I like the idea of looking at what they, like, what were their plans that Bitcoin mining specifically may have been getting in the way of. So this was just interesting, and I love the article and the ideas that, you know, trying to figure out like what's going on over there and why this all happened. And again, like I said, I just think this was such a bullish event. I mean, obviously it's huge for the decentralization of Bitcoin. It's huge for the proof of concept of what would happen if Bitcoin has to make a huge shift, has to adjust to an unfriendly jurisdiction. Well, we just saw that. And now, even more interestingly, is the United States has just been given the opportunity of a century. Unfortunately, I have very little faith that they won't be utterly stupid about it and, you know, shoot the goose that lays the golden egg. But man, did China ever just deal the United States a royal flush. Just worried the U.S. might fold on it. We will see. I guess the lesson is hold Bitcoin and long popcorn. All right. With that, we'll close this one out. Thank you guys for listening to today's show. Thank you to Nick Carter for this article. And it was actually featured on CoinDesk, by the way. I don't even think I mentioned that. Thank you to our lovely sponsors. Don't forget to get your Bitcoin 2022 tickets. 10% off those suckers with Guy Swan at checkout. Snag your fold card. 20% off that one for guyswan.com/fold. Stack your sats automatically with Swan Bitcoin and keep all that shit safe on your BitBox O2 hardware wallet. All right, guys. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll have another episode out tomorrow. I've got an interview and it looks like everything is lined up and we're going to do it. I'm very excited about it. And there's a couple of those actually on the way. So don't forget to subscribe. Stay tuned. We have got some amazing shit in the pipeline. This is Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan. And until next time, everybody, take it easy. This has been Bitcoin Audible, a 111 production.
Yeah. This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.